So let me start by thanking our four panelists for their stimulating papers. Considered separately and together, they offer us rich and diverse possibilities for further discussion. My charge here today is to try to synthesize their papers in about 10 minutes. The main goal is to encourage questions and comments from the audience and also to get our panelists to elaborate on their thinking and to engage each other's papers as well. There are, of course, many prospective threads that can be drawn together. I'll focus here on three: globalism, loss, and transparency. Globalism. Obviously, this is a key term for the panel, and the papers today do not disappoint. Their geographies of interest include not only Latin America, China, Brazil, and indeed the planet. They also examine these regions via other geographies and routes: the preservation of Chinese archives through the work of German institutions, the simultaneous collection and neglect of Brazilian materials in Paris and Rio de Janeiro, the negotiations of national histories in El Salvador, Argentina, Chile, and Guatemala that together suggest broader patterns across the region, and for Professor Heald, the scale is planetary and the dynamics continental. But this panel is global not only in the sense that we have examples from multiple nations, and it is not only global because the objects of study in question impel analysis across national boundaries. The papers in this panel also offer or exhibit a key tension in globalism as an analytic category. On the one hand, our panelists point to the limits of national paradigms, and we should be familiar with these at this point across disciplines. National paradigms cannot contain the broad circulation of modern archives and information. The global dimensions of our digital age are a truism, but some of our panelists show that archives also operate in global contexts during the age of paper and analog photography. Indeed, they demonstrate that we are not only in a digital age today, but that old media continue to shape how we conceptualize, create, and use electronic archives. In this sense, our panelists challenge national boundaries and also senses of temporal boundedness. So, on the one hand, our papers show the limits of national conceptions, but as is often the case with global studies, they also show the recalcitrance of nation states. As Pascal Casanova has demonstrated in the domain of literary studies, global circulation does not transcend national geographies to establish an idealized world republic of letters. And as our papers show, we should not think of archives, digital or otherwise, as circulating freely and without friction across the globe. Government regimes, national ideologies, structural inequalities enforced by corporate monopolies and state power, all these continue to assert their influence on archives, from Guatemala's El Archivo or Archivo to the suppression of historical documents in the People's Republic of China. I can't help but think of Professor Jaguaribe's lost access to the physical photos of Nambaquara Indians as a metaphor for the recalcitrance of nationalism. The Olympics can represent an idealized vision of international cooperation and even globalism, but the building of an Olympic stadium in Rio de Janeiro sparked a conflict between displaced Indians and security forces, leading to the closing of a national museum dedicated in part to making the Nambaquara archives accessible. That the photos in question came from a commission led by Candido Rondon, a multi-ethnic figure of both imperial expansion and multicultural understanding, further indicates how the national and global are historically and theoretically entangled. I'd be interested to hear more from our panelists about how they conceptualize the relationship between globalism and nationalism in their work. Thread two, loss. One need not be Borges, Derrida, Saramago, or Foster Wallace to recognize that archives are never complete, that even in our digital age, with its dreams of comprehensive databases and total information, archives remain riven with gaps, silences, and elisions. In powerful ways, political, ethical, and emotional, our panelists today discuss different types of loss. Professor Wagner's examples of the Stasi files from East Germany and the suppression of scholarly information in China point to the loss of archival knowledge, because the information that Professor Wagner hopes to preserve has at some point entered the digital record. We often have markers, metadata, if you will, on what has been lost and what needs to be recovered. The challenge here is to skillfully select the materials that are both at risk and worth saving. In Professor Weld's account of recovering Cold War archives in Latin America, we learn about people silenced, disappeared, and murdered, and the fraught recovery of records that might reclaim, or perhaps more accurately, mark the elision of such voices. Because these records have had little prior presence in the public domain, it is not precisely clear what records have been lost and what is possible to be recovered. I sense a similar dynamic in Professor Jaguaribe's paper. The spectral Indians of Mato Grosso exist only as photographs recovered from the French National Archives and now physically sequestered in a Brazilian museum. Professor Jaguaribe is sensitive to our lack of knowledge about the Nambiquara subjects, whose very names are not their own and who stand as markers of lives only partially recorded and partially recovered. For his part, Professor Heal is highly attuned to how archives are lost to segments of the population, those without wealth, institutional access, and political freedom. In all of these papers, there is a sense of both recovery and loss and the potential of each, of ever-expanding archives that will never be complete. I'm curious to know more about what our panelists think about the practical, epistemological, and disciplinary limits of their projects. Thread three, transparency. At the end of her paper, Professor Weld invited us to further explore what she calls, quote, the liberal fetishizing of transparency. I confess that I may be guilty of this very thing, for I approached all of our papers with the unexamined assumption that gaining and maintaining access to the archives described was more or less to be desired, not only for intellectual purposes, but in the services of social justice and social repair. I'm not sure precisely where our panelists stand on this question, though reconsidering our papers in light of Professor Weld's comment, I do sense some ambivalence and potential divergences regarding the potentialities of transparency. What might be some unintended consequences of Professor Wagner's project of archiving materials that a superpower wishes removed from public records? How does Professor Jaguaribe understand the moral and political work of her project? How serious is Professor Heal about archiving all cultural productions across history? And for Professor Weld, in what specific ways do we fetishize the recovery of archives, and what ways precisely are they liberal? I wonder, too, more generally about various impediments to transparency. There can be, of course, intentional censorship, conspiracy, and informational control in the manner that Professors Weld and Wagner detail. There can also be accidental, one would almost say random dynamics, as in the closing of Rio de Janeiro's Museum of the Indian. And we cannot ignore the structural impediments, technological, ideological, generic, political, that Professor Heal indicates. I wonder, too, if transparency is also challenged by the sheer superabundance of information that can render archives functionally opaque. Think, for instance, how some of the photographs that Professor Jaguaribe reclaimed were not suppressed or disappeared, but lost in the shuffle of the archives. Think of the difficulty of sorting through the bureaucratic records looking for traces of a lost person, a common trope in postmodern fiction and an all too real problem in post-Cold War Latin America. Indeed, one facet of postmodernism in our digital age is that conspiratorial opacity can be driven not by silences and gaps, but by information overload. Globalism, loss, transparency, these are just some opening ideas to be considered or left behind as we please. I thought perhaps we could give each of the panelists an opportunity to say something about maybe one of these topics, and then we'll open up the floor to questions for these truly excellent presentations.